Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algy, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey, folks. Welcome to another episode of Ages of Rock podcast. It's been a few weeks.
You forgot our name.
And yes, today is Saturday, and we're releasing this episode today because Big Al's going to vacation in Mexico. Ooh. But before we do that, we've got Martin Popoff. Make sure I can pronounce it, and I still screw it up. And he's going to be talking about his book, Kiss at 50. And this thing is sturdy.
It's a solid book.
I'm going to knock somebody out right upside their magic head.
You'd have to pay for that if you checked out on the plane.
That's right. No, I ain't taking it on the plane.
And that book has traveled, too.
This book has traveled from Newburgh, Indiana, or wherever Martin sent it from, to Newburgh, from Newburgh to Columbus, Indiana, from Columbus, Indiana to Evansville, Indiana. So, welcome to the show, Martin, and tell us a little bit about the book and what got you deciding to make that particular book.
Well, so yeah. So thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, this is so this book is part of it's a concept those guys came up with. Dennis and I'm not sure who else over there, but my editor over at Quarto, I've done like 15 or so books for these guys. And this at 50 concept was theirs, and they've had a couple other ones over the years. We might have mutually come up with the whole, well, no, I think this was theirs too. The album by album series, the illustrated biographies. So I've done a few of both of those. But this at concept, I did a Bowie at 75 and an AC/DC at 50, and this one, and I've got a Van Halen at 50 coming up. And what the whole idea is come up with 50 career milestones or highlights and write about those. We put them in chronological order, and every studio album gets an entry. And that's basically it. I mean, the challenge is to kind of keep it within a certain word count that they want. They're big coffee table books. They're beautifully curated for photos, and the layouts are so nice in every book that I do for Quarto. But Dennis is a great music guy himself. So he's part of the photo process and captions and things. We both work on that. So yeah, coming up with the 50, that's kind of almost the funnest part. Although it's fun also, I started this tradition there, and I think he's probably foisted upon everybody now, but I started it with the Bowie, where I named every chapter after a song title. So that's always fun to match those up with everything. But then, yeah, what are they? 500 to 800 words. You got to keep things tight. So make sure everything sort of counts. So the writing is kind of agonized, you know, put together to make sure it fits. And then some sidebar stuff. But so it's just like an alternate way to tell the story of a band. It's just through 50 career highlights. It makes a total coffee table book.
Cool. I enjoyed about it. It was pretty much. You get some really cool photos. Some you've probably seen and some maybe you haven't seen. And then you get just a blurb about that time frame or whatever, and then move on. And it's not like you have to sit there and read for, you know, you're not reading like you're reading a book that's 500 pages or whatever. So I think that's pretty cool. That coffee table concept for me is pretty good, because I seem to have a little AD&D when I read books.
Yeah, every story's in and of itself in it, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Starts, it ends. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of found myself as like, you know, you start out from the beginning, you know, you go, what do you think is going to be next? You know, I didn't kind of peruse the book first. I was just kind of going, and looking at it like that. It's like, okay, I know where we're at in time now. What's going to be next? And that was really cool. I liked that part. And like you said, like Bill said, you know, some of those photos were some that we've seen, you know, multiple times. And there was some that, you know, hey, that's a new picture I've never seen before. Yeah. So is that something that they have the photos, I guess, already ready to go, and then you basically wrote the story and everything else, and then you guys decide on what photos to put in there. Is that how that worked?
Yeah. So the cool thing with this company is, it's more or less, they've got, good blanket arrangements with the photo agencies. So they can go out and find exactly what they want and shop. So that's more Dennis's job. He does all that. And he does a really good job of making them topical for that topic. But I know even him at sometimes would give him these are the 50 entries I want to do. And one or two got swapped out here or there because, I could hear his wheels turning. He's going, I don't know if I can get a picture for that to match. So sometimes just like a couple of entries or so, we're almost like, can you switch those out for something else? Because I can't envision being able to get a picture of that particular TV show or interview or something like that, or Super Bowl thing, although we do have some Super Bowl stuff in there. But yeah, that's what I like about it as well. And it's a mix of live photography and the memorabilia and all that as well. So I think the pictures tell a good story along with it, too. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Go
ahead, Alan.
When you were coming up with material for this book, were there any, I don't know if you're a big Kiss fan or if you just were commissioned to do this, but were there any surprises about the band that kind of caught you off guard?
I am a big Kiss fan. I've been there since the debut album, and I joined the Kiss Army and off of the inserts in Destroyer and all that stuff. But surprises, boy, I don't know about surprises. And I included various times I've interviewed the guys. So there's interview clips that I made good use of that I have, but I haven't interviewed them a lot, really. It's Ace the most. I've got some good Paul stuff in there. Yeah, there's some good little clips in there. But in terms of actual surprises, not particularly. One thing I felt writing this book that kind of was bothering me in the back of my mind the whole time is that there's already been a lot of Kiss books out, right. And they're very scholarly. And some of the more indie ones actually are super scholarly. Like there are lots and lots of pages, like, every gig book. And then there's all the solo albums books and all that stuff. Right. I almost like threw up my hands and said, there's no way. The deepest Kiss fans, this is going to, really serve them or please them on too many levels or many levels. I mean, and a lot of fans are just going to think it's sort of I knew all that kind of thing. Right. But the one thing I do like about this is the way it fits in the world of Kiss books out there. It is a really nicely done book by a big, reputable US publisher, and it's also done outside the camp. So it's not done by Kiss and it's not an indie. So it kind of fits that range where it's a really professional book put out. But I can be pretty impartial. I mean, just like many Kiss fans, we know we're notorious complainers about everything. Right. So I do my fair share of complaining about things in there too. It's not a puff piece throughout. That's for sure. And Kiss isn't even, I was asked this in an interview a little while ago, and it's like, oh, is Kiss your favorite band? And it's like, where would they fit in your favorite bands? And I'm thinking, man, when it comes to actually my favorite bands, I don't even think they're in my top 10. But I love Kiss, and I've got everything they ever did, as a new release. And I like many of the different eras, and I have my few I complain about. I'm a massive, massive fan. And like I say, this is one of the few bands where I can say I was there from the debut album forward. Rush is another one. So 74. So I would have been 11. Mm-hmm. Right. But previous to that, I had Nazareth and Deep Purple and Black Sabbath things and Steppenwolf and Mott the Hoople when I was 10 and 9 or whatever. But I wasn't there for the new releases. Right. Mm-hmm. Although I think I was there for the new release. I think I was there for BTO in 73, 72, maybe. Kiss, I definitely remember going to the record store, seeing that, getting it, and thinking, that's the other funny thing. I remember getting that home and thinking, even at 11 year olds going, this is not as good as Black Sabbath or Deep Purple, but it's pretty darn good anyway. So
speaking of Kiss releases, Let's find out if you are on Team Alan or Team Bill. Do you like music from The Elder?
No, I'm not a massive fan.
You're on Team Bill.
but I quite like it. I mean, it's recorded well, and there's some good heavy songs on there, too. But the whole idea of them doing a concept album just rubs me the wrong way. It's just I did a podcast episode. Did I do it on Fully? If I should do one Fully on concept albums, but I've done it on the whole concept of be careful what you wish for. Right. And sometimes part of that is when you want one of your bands that's kind of gone non-heavy and you want them to make a heavy album and then they do it. And then you got, it's not as good as your more creative stuff. Right. But Kiss the Elder kind of fits in that whole Ronnie James Dio Magica thing where it's like, oh yeah, it would be amazing to get a concept album out of him. And then he puts it out and you go, no, I didn't need a concept album from you.
That's pretty amazing. If you look back at concept albums and you think how many concept albums really truly went anywhere or did really, really, really well.
Yeah.
A couple.
Yeah.
There are a couple.
The Wall, Dark Side of the Moon, you know.
Yeah, there's a couple. I mean, they did really, really well, right. But
I think they're talked about less too, because people are really, really, they're like intimidated by if people are going to ask them what the storyline is, right? Because the storylines are all often quite hard to understand on many concept albums, right?
Right. Well, the thing is, a concept album, you don't sit down and you don't pick a song out of a concept album and then take it off the turntable. You know, concept albums are made to put on the turntable and you listen to the whole thing. Then you put it away and you don't get it out for a couple years because you just can't sit there and listen to a concert.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, I always say that The Elder is a good album. It's just not a good Kiss album. You know, it's just not right. Kiss, but it's got its things. So, but Bill just hates it. So anyway,
there's a couple songs there. I'll give you credit for that. There's a couple songs.
Martin, getting back to
the beginning track where before the music starts and that end track when it's over, those are the best tracks on the whole thing. It's awesome. I relish those tracks.
Yeah. Now, just to kind of go on what you said a while ago, though, you know, that, you know, being that, you know, it's not going to be one of those indie books or anything else, you know, that 50 series is made to be a coffee table book. You know, I've got, like you said, I've got stuff that like Julian Gill and stuff writes, and it's a book of facts. Do I sit that on the coffee table? People will be like, what do you got this on here? You know, want to put a dictionary on the table, you know, but, you know, the Kiss book is a, like you said, it looks great. From the outside, you even have to open it to go, man, that's a nice book, you know, and then open it up. And it's something to sit around and, you know, and look at pictures. And the thing is, Kiss is a perfect example for that series because Kiss is a visual band. So, you know, what else better to put a picture book out?
And I get to review stuff too. And I get to really spout my opinion all over the place anyway. So I think people reading it kind of get caught off guard and go, wow, this is not like a corporately written book, right? Right. It looks nice, but this guy's like saying some stuff here sort of thing. Right. So it doesn't pull punches. And quite often you see stuff like that. And then also it's really got pretty heavy, dense writing where you kind of have to be a fan of the band or deeply into music, because what happens with, like I say, with this is I spent more time or half the time or as much time editing things down from too long to get everything to fit and try not to cut out facts. So it is a dense read at the same time. It's not fluffy like it's just a corporate book that sounds like it's written by someone who's not a fan.
So Martin, what was you made comment about that, you know, trying to get the timing down and stuff like that. What was the, from concept of this to, you know, book being hitting the publisher? What's time frame for a book like this typically?
Well, I'm pretty fast. I'm a pretty fast writer. So I get about, I've been kind of good for between 6 and 9 books a year, getting out, and I've got I've done 120 books. So the funny thing is you usually have other fires that you're putting out, other periodic writing, like I write for Goldmine and Brave Words, and we're doing all kinds of video shows all the time. And usually I got 2 or 3 books on the go. So it's hard to tell. But when I try to figure it out and go, I hope I'm making more than minimum wage on all this stuff, right? when I try to figure it out, I don't think there's too many books that take me more than 2 months work. And I would think a lot of them probably, if you sat down and worked, you know, a 45, 50 hour work week or whatever, it would be more like 6 weeks. So yeah, they can be done pretty quickly.
Do you usually work on multiple books at the same time, or is it like I'm focusing on this one and that's where I'm going?
Sometimes I have to. It's a couple or three. You know, I always give people the advice, once you get those blinders on, like, stay with it sort of thing, because you gotta, you know, it's good to keep your head in that band so you're not forgetting things, and you know what you wrote earlier, especially books that are full of quotes, like you know, have things in place. So you don't re-say something you said earlier or whatever. So it's good to, and you got all your research stuff around you. So just, if you're going to get down to writing a book, just get to it and get it finished, kind of thing.
That's cool. So on your, you know, being that there's 50 things, when you were done with it, and everything, did anybody, you or somebody in your camp, go, oh hell, we forgot something, or we wished we would have put this fact in here, or this little blurb? Was there anything like that, or you?
I don't think
you
there's any regrets at this point. No, I think everything's in there. I mean, if anything, sometimes you almost think, did we really need this one? The, you know, the gotcha. Super Bowl appearance or that interview or something like that, right? Gotcha. But no, it worked out roughly right. You know, the Bowie one, we had 75. Yeah, AC/DC was 50. I also liked the idea of splitting this into, what did I do? Three categories or four? How did that work here? We've got,
I don't remember.
Yeah, we've got Kiss Major was part one. Kiss Minor is part two. So it's almost like, Kiss Major goes through to Alive 2. So it's the rise to fame and all the fame. And then Kiss Minor starts with the solo albums and goes through the Elder and Creatures. So this is Kiss in trouble, looking for various directions. And we've got MTV, Hair Metal, and Kiss, which is Lick It Up through to Alive 3. And I always like that sort of concept, how Kiss really, people, when you have those hair metal shows and you talk about hair metal bands, right? Kiss really doesn't come up very much, yet they're probably the most hair metal band of every hair metal band in the 80s, right? I mean, they look the part. They're putting out a ton of records. They're working with outside songwriters. The music is total hair metal, right? So it's really funny that this band from the 70s is actually showing all the young bands how to do it properly, kind of thing. So that's funny. And then I've got part four, I guess they called Reunion, starts with the Kiss Conventions and MTV Unplugged, and it goes through all that messiness, you know, of Peter in, Peter out, and all that kind of thing. And then Legacy. And I remember doing the Bowie sort of that way as well, where, you know, all these bands eventually become a classic rock band, right? A band that it really is all about the history, right? You know, you didn't think of Kiss really that way in the 80s. You didn't, you know, just think of them as a 70s bands as they're going through the 80s and going, ha, okay, fine, or whatever. But you definitely, with all these bands, the life cycle at the end is like, the history is so overwhelming that that's really what people think of you, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's so cool.
So is there an artist that you haven't done a book for yet that you're interested in?
Well, I've been doing these cool panel books where I've been lining up people mostly from our video channel, and we get 10 or 12 people, and then I do a Zoom interview with them, and we go through all the studio albums, and then I write Q&A chapters on those. And those started with Quarto, and they looked like this. Now I'm doing some more trade paperbacky ones for my UK publisher. We've done Blue Oyster Cult and The Cure, and right now are coming out. Well, just out last week was Robert Plant, Pictures at 11, Robert Plant, album by album. And then I've got a Thin Lizzy one coming out. So the reason I'm bringing this up is that there's so many more bands that I could do those panel books on that I couldn't do a normal book on, like, for example, working on a Genesis one right now, right? I've never interviewed anybody from Genesis other than Steve Hackett. There are a bunch of bands that I couldn't do a regular kind of book on, but the panel thing allows me to do that. And this does too. I mean, I'd never interviewed David Bowie either. But, you know, that's not the point. These are not interview intensive books. it's come up with 50 milestones and write about them sort of thing. So that's cool. These sorts of projects, when people have them and bring them up, allows me to do those kind. We just did a grunge episode earlier today, and I would still like to do something on grunge. I don't know about any particular band, but I'd like to do one of my histories where I do these long timeline with quotes things on the origins of grunge and sort of go through the grunge thing. I did one on that called Who Invented Heavy Metal, which is one of my favorite books I've ever done. It's 120,000 words, and it ends in 1971. And so it's literally... Wow. The origins of time back to the walls of, the walls of Jericho being knocked down by trumpets and Greece and the Civil War and the start of classical music through to 1971. Right. Who invented heavy metal. So I like doing that kind of thing as well. But there's some weird ones. The Jam, XTC. I finally did a book on The Damned. I love The Damned. I wrote a book where I did an analysis of every single The Damned song. I've done that for Zeppelin and The Clash. So yeah, there's still ideas out there, still lots to do.
You're a busy man.
Yeah. So Martin, when you think about what you've done in the looking back at history, we talk a lot about, right. We talk sometimes about like, where is new music coming from? There's new music out there, but it's hard to find. And sometimes it's difficult and challenging. Think about 25, 30 years from now. Who's going to write a book about the bands from 50 years ago? I mean, who's going to write the book? Mm-hmm. What are the artists that are going to be in those type of books? Because when you think back, in the last 15, 20 years, there's a couple of bands that are out there. And now with music being so disposable, you can get it on, you can get it and it's gone. And the next thing's out there because of, it's singles, really, not as much albums anymore.
Yeah.
What does that next cycle look like? We talk about it. We text about it all the time amongst our buddies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like it or not, Taylor Swift is taking over the world. And, it's just the way it is. Right. Good for her. Who's that rock band that's out there? Because when you look around, there'll be some a couple, but I don't know who they are. I mean,
mega bands. There's not the mega bands like we talked about.
I mean, there'll be the Metallica. Maybe that's when the Metallica thing comes out, because it's, but they've been around since the late 80s, late 80s. So, there's still just interesting, because, it's very cyclical, right? It's just now it's just more, feels more disposable, I guess, is the right question.
Okay. So one thing that happens is, yes, there are way more albums out, and there are way more bands that have tiny audiences, and probably total consumption of music probably has dropped somewhat because there's competition from movies and just the internet itself. And as video games get better and better, AI, virtual reality. So there's more competition for music. We can time shift our TV now. We couldn't do that in the 70s, right? So that's one global thing. The other thing I would say is that even though there aren't trucks driving around plastic and cellophane and cardboard anymore, so the size of the industry and the dollars being thrown around has changed, right? Because all music is virtual now, there still are massive bands, and they still come out, and there's still bands filling arenas and stadiums all the time, right? So it's not like there aren't famous bands anymore. They just don't sell that many records anymore. They still make records, so that's cool. I mean, the album hasn't died. People would say by now the album would be gone, but the album isn't even really gone yet, which is kind of weird. Because logically you would have thought the way kids' brains are wired, everybody by this point we thought would be releasing a song here and there whenever, right? Completely at random, right? But yes, there's still albums. I don't know. I mean, as time goes on, people replace me. They're writing about the bands, big bands from the 90s and the start of the 2000s, there's already many books out on many of those bands, and that will continue on. So it's not just Taylor Swift. I mean, but there's tons and tons of other, obviously, the other thing that happens is there's way less guitar, bass, and drums now, but it hasn't completely gone away. So there are still rock bands. But yeah, there's always been a weird debate about, people say that in the hip hop industry, for example, which is a massive part of the music industry, people say that stuff really comes and goes fast. Like there's not a lot of artists that are stuck with for 10 and 15 and 20 albums kind of thing. Part of the problem there that's always driven me crazy is all the this featuring this guy and this guy on one song. And then, you know, every album's so complicated, right? You can't even tell what the band is in hip hop, right? It's just so much collaborating going on all the time, right? So I think it'll more or less continue. People still read, you know, people have decided actually they still want physical books. Mm-hmm. They don't want physical albums anymore in a huge way, but some do. But physical books are still around. People thought 5 years ago, 10 years ago, it would all be replaced by ebooks. But that's not the case. That never happened because I think it's just because people have decided, hey, we can't have our face on these screens all the time, right? You have to put your eyes somewhere else rather than the screen once in a while if you want to read something. So I think that's why there's still books. So yeah, it'll continue on. The last thing I want to say on that is people come to me all the time and go, oh man, I want you to write a Dream Theater book or something, right? And it's like, or a Marillion book. It's like, There are the super fans out there who will do a way better job than me on and a lot of these bands, and it'll be their first or second book and they'll do an amazing job. And so, you know, new authors will come along and they'll have the enthusiasm for these bands and do an incredible job that I couldn't even get close to because I'm old and jaded. And, you know, Or I may not, you know, slash combined with not, I'm not a huge fan of that band or whatever. Right. So yeah, people will always want to write rock books and that'll keep going forward too.
Yeah. I can't imagine trying to write a book for a band that I don't care for.
Yeah. That would be weird. I would. Yeah. Your interest level would be like way low.
Wow. Yeah. I've never done that. Although the funny thing is what I've been using these panel books for in some, and The Cure was one of them to begin with. I'm a medium level Cure fan and even a lower than medium level expert on the band. But the cool thing about those books is like, I'm using those to have these guys teach me about this band. Cause I'm just the Q&A guy. I'm saying, okay, next song, tell me about that one. Next song, next song, next song. And so I've used them as like a massive education on the band. Cause I'm just the moderator. Right. And I'm just taking all their stuff. So that's really cool too.
Yeah, so the passion that we, you know, that you were talking about, the Kiss fans have, we will argue over the nth minuscule, how many buttons were on Gene's codpiece, you know, or whatever. You know, I've seen people argue the craziest stuff before, right?
Yeah.
You know, it is. I mean, if you have that passion for that band, then you try to absorb and have knowledge about everything and. Yeah, you can get to some pretty heated debates and great storytelling too, right? You know, moments in time that occurred and different things that really were meaningful to people. So, I mean, like it's you know, we all remember our first whatever show. I mean, for the most part, you know, whatever that was. And I think that those kind of things are just embedded in you forever, and those experiences and stuff like it. So to be able to tell that story is really cool. And get people involved to help tell their story too.
Yeah,
is even better. So that's neat.
Another deep point about that whole thing about having things to argue about with Kiss or whatever. I mean, one of the neat things I find about that band is that they packed their lunch and went to work every day, right? So you know, sitting there in the 80s, we're thinking, oh, really? Do I need another Kiss album? Right, kind of thing, right? You know. At some point, it might have been, okay, well, here comes another one, whatever. Or you take it for granted, right? Years and years later, you're happy that this stuff happened, that there are these stories that are there. You know, even Kiss themselves can look back and say, you know what, we maybe didn't make any money on that tour. We lost money. Maybe that record scraped its way to gold or whatever. But now we can look back after all these years, man, we put out five albums or whatever it is in the '80s or six or seven or whatever it is. Right. And we got all these gold records and, you know, so a lot of, you know, that saying, you know, 80% of life is showing up. Right. So they just showed up all the time. They did stuff. They showed up for MTV, you know, Unplugged. They showed up for, we'll make a grunge album. They showed up for a reunion. And so now years later, you look back on the catalog and realize they went to work. They did a lot of work. There's a ton of variety. They worked with different producers. They tried this. They tried that. It just gives us all so much to talk about because there aren't these massive, massive long gaps of inactivity anywhere. They gave us things to talk about.
You know, one thing I've noticed here, sorry, I popped off. That's the first time my Apple computer has locked up. Oh, yeah. I don't know what I thought. Everything just went froze. Yeah. Anyway, something I've noticed in the last couple weeks, and I don't know if you guys have noticed it, the amount of pictures of Kiss without makeup off, you know, off stage wise, just in has come out in the last 2 weeks. I've seen more pictures posted on Facebook than I have seen in my entire lifetime. There's been a bunch of them through like Unmasked era and stuff like that. There was one, they were on a cruise ship and they're all standing outside on that. But, you know, My thought on that is, since Kiss is done now, well, that portion of Kiss is done now, the, you know, the stuff, you know, Gene's going back out and everything, that there were people in the camps that took a lot of photos that, you know, were trusted and never put these photos out. And now there's this, like, you know what? What's the big deal? I'm going to start. Maybe one did it. And I was like, hey, I had some photos too. And now they're posting these pictures. But I find it's there again. It's something fun to do with Kiss now that they're done. They're still exciting us, you know, and they're still, you're going, wow, that's cool, you know. So that's one thing about it. I think they've got a whole treasure chest full of stuff that you're going to start seeing.
Yeah, and there's still more to argue about, right? People are complaining about the reissue, the 50th anniversary reissue of Kiss, and complaining about the Avatar and all that, and are they done? And so, yeah, we're still talking about them, that's for sure.
Yeah, that is.
I'm amazed how much heated debate Kiss gets constantly all the time. We just did a Sea of Tranquility that turned into a big argument all over Rock and Roll Over for some reason. And then it blew up. It got a lot of views. Right. So, yeah. And every time we do a Kiss show on the Contrarians, it gets good numbers. So, yeah, it's an interesting band, but, and I can see, and then you get the people coming in saying, this is really simple, kind of stupid music. I can't believe you guys are talking about this so much. So there's always this reality check that someone comes in and trolls and says, you know what? It ain't worth that much discussion, right? And then you stand back and go, yeah, you're kind of right about that.
But so,
yeah. I mean, the Kiss has been one of my biggest, you know, I've been a fan of them for a long time, but I don't sit and listen to Kiss every day. You know, I've listened to all kinds of music, but I'll sit down and argue. You know, I don't sit around and argue about Fleetwood Mac or the Eagles and stuff like that, but I'll sit around and, you know, throw punches over Kiss just because, and I don't know why. That's the way, we're all wired that way, I guess.
Well, the other thing is, you bring up, you know, that interesting, intriguing point about the photos. I saw somebody make a comment online saying, wow, Ace Frehley, he must have a good publicist working for him right now because he's everywhere. Everybody's talking about him, right? So it's like I found that, and I think the answer is no. Ace isn't smart enough to go out and figure out to get the best publicist, right? He might have a publicist, but he didn't strategize about it, right? But I thought the point was kind of interesting that this. You know, if this was a big corporation and not Ace Frehley world, it's like you would go, damn, someone's doing a really good job of publicity right now.
Yeah, he's no Taylor Swift, that's for sure. Even Dave Grohl's going, damn, Taylor's got a way to, you know, Dave Grohl was everywhere, you know, a couple years ago. You couldn't see an article anywhere without his name in it. And he's like going, damn, Taylor took my spot now.
Well, I think that's, yeah. You know, but Ace is, you know, Ace cuts from that. The whole theory of, you know, one of the theories of Kiss, I guess, was, you know, press is press.
Yeah, good press, good or bad
press doesn't matter. As long as your name's out there, and he's been in all of that, right? But he's also, you know, it is amazing to see how he has, you know, he's got the new record he has coming out, stuff like that. It is everywhere. I see it. And, you know, I see it everywhere because I follow those things on Facebook and Twitter and whatever that you know, are pimping his stuff. So that's just the way it works. But it's just amazing how much he is really out there.
Yeah, he's in my feed a lot.
And yeah, weird it's all the time. And it's interesting. I wonder if I'm sure. I mean, I just wonder if I ask some of my other buddies that are not huge Kiss fans, like who's in their feed like all the time. Right. It'd be interesting to know that. Another band I was thinking about that just popped in my head would be Rammstein. That's a band I would think at some point would get some kind of a, just because of the visuals. The visuals of that band is incredible. You know, some type of book at some point by somebody that would come along and because those people in Europe, they just that's one of those bands that people just they will flock to see.
Well, funny Rammstein story is that's the only band I've ever interviewed. I've only interviewed them once, but I interviewed them through an interpreter in person, sitting there.
Wow.
So that was funny.
Well, I was going to say, Bill, your problem with that book is it's going to be in German, so you can't.
It's not going to matter.
I hope it's got a lot of pictures.
I would go see them if they ever came to the States again. I would go see them just to go to the show. I mean, I know they do big. I mean, they do like Chicago. I mean, Soldier Field and that kind of stuff. And they do big football venues and stuff. But I want to see this. I want to see the spectacle.
You know, I've done that. I don't know. You know, I don't quite understand it. Well, I can't understand it. You know what he's saying, but I'll sit there and start watching something, a live thing, you know, from a concert on YouTube. And I'm like you, I just kind of, I get really intrigued. I'm like, I don't really know what's going on here, but it looks cool.
They're it all sounds happy, good. You know, it should be good.
And it's kind of odd. It's kind of like a, I don't know. They're almost like putting on play in a way too, you know, the way he's does it, you know, does his shtick and everything, but it is interesting.
I have to say, really cool.
I swear, I swear that people watch that band and they're intrigued because part of their brain is working on when does this go uncomfortably into a Nazi rally sort of look, right? Or like right wing, no, acceptable right wing, acceptable, you know, far right, acceptable. You know, you're watching it and going, what? I wonder what they're going to get in trouble for here.
Yeah, you know, I have that same deal about Ghost. I can't nail that down either. I mean, it's that thing that people who like Ghost, man, I tell you what, they love them to death. You know, they talk about it, you know, and you got to see them live. You know, you got to see them live. And I'm like, I've watched some of their videos and I'm like going, I don't get this. You know, they change singers like every other week or every other record. And, you know, you don't know who in the hell is playing on. I think it's like a Blue Man Group. It's just, okay, call Bob up tonight. You know,
I'm going to correct you here. They don't change singers.
No, he's always
Tobias Forge is.
Yes. So they just keep changing the name then.
Well, it changes the
they
name.
Call him.
They yeah,
call
he him gets something. Different papal names.
Yeah,
gotcha. But okay,
that dude, the same guy. That okay. dude is the Brain Paul child. Stanley yeah. of Ghost.
Okay, I didn't know. See, so, I don't know enough about.
Well, that, but I figured I would correct you before some of our listeners got on you because you know. Yeah.
I don't want to piss the Ghost people off. You know,
that's right.
Well, Martin, you never see him anyway.
Yeah, Martin, we have taken up enough of your time. You. Let us know or let our listeners know where they can find this book and where they can find more information about the other books you've written.
Yeah, so it's martinpopoff.com. Pretty easy. I'm a mail order guy of my own books, so I sign them and send them out from the office here. I've got U.S. media mail rates, even though I'm in Toronto, so it's pretty reasonable. But yeah, there's PayPal buttons there. For every book, they're all listed in a big long order from the top, but I have the Kiss book, of course, as well, but yeah, sign them, send them out from the office, martinpopoff.com.
I'll be looking for that Van Halen book.
Well, again, Martin, thank you for your time. As always, folks, you know, visit agesofrock.com, check out our past episodes and social media links, and until next time, peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.